Philadelphia, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. In June 1938, while secretly Hitler's plans go forward for the domination of Europe and the world, in London, Winston Churchill, who has become the government's most ardent critic, called one day at No. 10 Downing Street, the home of Britain's Prime Minister, the unpretentious, revered dwelling in which he himself has seen so much history made. Here he talks with the Prime Minister, Mr. Neville Chamberlain.
Mr. Churchill, I know that you differ from the government on many points, and I would be very foolish if I were to express any objections to this. In a democracy, thank God, every man is entitled to his own opinion, and the government is not always necessarily right. But in the light of what has been happening lately in Europe, I believe our wisest course is to try to achieve a measure of unity, at least with regard to exterior affairs.
Any criticism I have made, Mr. Chamberlain, was intended to help the government, not to cause obstruction. I quite agree that we should try to achieve some sort of a united front at this time.
If I give you my word that the government will adopt a stiffer attitude towards the dictatorship and resolutely oppose any further territorial aggression in Europe, will that be sufficient to secure your cooperation?
I promise not to obstruct any legislation directed to those objects and to support the government's foreign policy as long as it is founded on resisting aggression.
I believe that our future foreign policy should be based not on a strong League of Nations, not on collective security, but on a well-prepared Britain. But I believe we should go to war only in defense of the Commonwealth or Imperial communications, in defense of Belgium and France should they be attacked, or in fulfillment of treaty obligations to Portugal, Iraq, and Egypt.
What about Spain and Czechoslovakia?
In Spain, Italy has promised not to intervene. I may say that I have the greatest confidence in that promise. As for Czechoslovakia, I believe that Britons will not pledge themselves to fight automatically for the Czechs or for anyone else in Central Europe in circumstances over which the government has no control.
I have no wish to embarrass the government, Mr. Chamberlain, especially now. And I appreciate your action in coming to me with a frank statement of your intentions. If those intentions are honored, the government has nothing to fear from me.
Thank you. And now, I want to talk to you about France. The rumors have reached me lately that Monsieur Blum intends to give active aid to the Spanish government forces. That, from our point of view, would be extremely dangerous.
I quite agree.
For obvious reasons, I cannot send an official messenger to investigate the position, but the visit of a man outside the government would arouse no particular curiosity.
You want me to go to France?
I would be most grateful if you would collect some information on the political situation there. Sir Eric Phipps would make you welcome, I know.
Very well, Mr. Chamberlain. I'll go tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tell me, Monsieur Fondin, what are the chances of a strong national government being formed in France?
Why do you ask that, Mr. Churchill?
Because in Britain, it's generally thought that the Blum administration is not sufficiently strong enough to take up the correct attitude if trouble arises.
Here in France, we feel the same way about the Chamberlain government. How long is it, Churchill, before it falls and is replaced by a Lloyd George, a Churchill Eden, a central administration?
My dear Monsieur Flaubert, such a contingency has never even been considered. The Chamberlain government has the entire confidence of the country.
But then I have been misinformed. As to a national government being formed here, well, such a thing has been discussed. I will admit. Laval is strongly behind Chamberlain's policy and favors the formation of a national administration here. But alas, Laval is not greatly trusted. A pity.
You think Blum will soon fall?
Undoubtedly. He's been pressed by the left to send aid to Barcelona and warned by the right to keep out. He will fall between two stools. That is certain.
And then? Who knows?
Perhaps Laval, perhaps Michel, perhaps...
You think that war will come, General Gamelin?
Oh, with certainty, Monsieur Churchill. For what other reason does Germany build up a great army, a great effort?
And in what form will it come, in your opinion, General?
I am informed that the Nazis have a plan for a Swiss war, a war of movement. They call it Blitzkrieg or Lightning War. But there is divided opinion on this point. The more conservative elements in the Reichswehr are opposed to it, I believe. Probably the next war will be similar to the last. Entrenchment, deliberate movements on a grand scale, while each side awaits the other's exhaustion.
And the outcome?
Who can doubt it? This new army of Germany may be large in numbers, but it cannot be compared to the army of France. It is composed of men outside the military tradition. He is not a general of note left. Hindenburg, Ludendorff, and the other great German leaders, they are gone. And in their place are amateurs, men who have not experienced actual war conditions. How different with us. Pétain, Végon, Georges, all experienced and seasoned leaders, as you will admit. And I myself will take complete charge of operations. The outcome, my dear Monsieur Churchill, is a foregone conclusion. And besides, do not forget the Maginot Line.
Nevertheless, General Gamelin, you must leave nothing to chance. Your soldiers will be of no avail if your statesmen are not united behind them. Why did you want to see me so urgently?
It's Duncan, Father. He's got himself into a bit of bother.
Oh, what sort of bother?
Well, it was like this. Duncan found out something about our anti-aircraft guns. He said they were no good or something.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. Well?
So he went along to Mr. Horbelicia and told him there was some dissatisfaction about these guns in the army.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Horbelicia practically told him to mind his own business. So Duncan went home and wrote him a pretty stiff letter.
Yeah, he would. That husband of yours is worse than I was at his age. If he doesn't look out, he'll be almost as unpopular. Oh, but go on, go on. What did Horbelicia do?
Well, he sent a letter to the War Office, and they said that Duncan had committed a breach of the Official Secrets Act. There's to be a parliamentary inquiry, and Duncan's going to be court-martialed.
Deuce he is. Why didn't Duncan come along and tell me about this himself?
Well, he said he could fight his own battles.
Not while he's my son-in-law. I'm going to take complete charge of this, Diana. By the time I'm finished with Neville Chamberlain and Leslie Horbelicia, they'll wish they'd never been born. To be my son-in-law is being victimized for telling the truth about the defense situation. He sees a flaw that might cost millions of innocent lives. And for his patriotic impulse to expose that flaw, he is accused of treachery to the army. Instead of attacking loyal British subjects, the Prime Minister would be better advised in preventing the lives of British seamen being taken in Spanish water. The Prime Minister has not sufficiently presented to the House the gravity of that offense. He is acquiescing in the debasement of a currency which we have defended for generations. That currency known as freedom. He is ignoring the fact that the British flag is not giving protection to persons proceeding on their lawful avocation. Nothing can be more detrimental to us than that we should seek to legitimize and affirm, not by words,
but by inaction. Unregulated bombing from the air. What consequences will this not have to ourselves when we shall be depending on neutral ships entering our own port in time of war? But the Prime Minister prefers to ignore this offense. He is more interested in supporting the War Minister in the prosecution of a patriot who dares to tell the truth. It may well be to remind members of the Treasury Bench that at the present moment, ministers of this state cannot do what ministers of the state of Germany can do.
Whiplash that is Winston Churchill's oratory is serving its purpose, stirring the government into greater activity, warning the government that England and the British people will not succumb much longer to the demands of the dictators. In all corners of England and the empire, British peoples are beginning to call for a dynamic leader. Once again, the name of Winston Churchill is on the lips of a great people. The call, an imperial leader. Thank you.